There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Welcome back to the second hour of coverage here on Saturday afternoon. It is the day of the royal wedding, but live sport is ongoing and we are building up to the FA Cup final at 8:15pm kickoff local time between Manchester United and Chelsea at Wembley Stadium. Now, who better to talk all things FA Cup than a man who has a track record of guiding Manchester United to FA Cup success back in the 1980s, a winner of the trophy in 1983 and 1985 as well. I am absolutely delighted to say that I believe we can now be joined on the line by Ron Atkinson. Ron, a very good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon to you, sir.
Ron, you're on your way to Wembley to watch Manchester United, your old club, take on Chelsea. And I got to ask you, Jose Mourinho, his comments a little bit earlier on this week that success will not be defined by what happens at Wembley today. Is that a fair statement for you, Ron?
I think I know what he's trying to say. I think they'll be disappointed. If for argument's sake they didn't win today, and I actually think they will win today, but if they didn't, I suppose you could say they've had a reasonable season. They've been runners up and, they've got to a Wembley final. But I think the icing on the cake would be a victory today. I think it would cover up an awful lot of things if they were to bring home the FA Cup.
Has criticism, and there has been a lot of criticism of Jose Mourinho at Manchester United this season, Ron, has it been unfair in your eyes? Because to him, he will say progress has been made from sixth until runners-up, as you mentioned there. But there's been a lot of the media that have gotten on his back in the last 12 months.
To be fair, he's not popular with the media. I like him. I actually do. I know him from when he first went to Chelsea, when he was at Porto, and I like him. I think that a lot of it's a defence mechanism, because he feels a bit resentful about the way that the press are sort of very happy to have a pop with him, if you like. I think what's happened as well with the fans seem to think that every Manchester United team that's ever played has played with a glorious freedom and attacking wingers and all that. And, that's not always been the truth, to be fair, but I think that because he's a very pragmatic manager who believes in his all-important thing is results. And sometimes he will say that results matter more than style, if you like.
Ron, Dale Gordon, how are you, sir?
That's my number two.
Listen, it's still on the way. It's still on the way. Don't worry, I'll get it to you shortly. But, Ron, you're now on your way to Wembley. Now, obviously, the FA Cup holds some really, really great memories for you, personally. What are your memories of the FA Cup? Are we looking at this afternoon's FA Cup as something? There's obviously a little event that's going on in London this afternoon as well. So Manchester United and Chelsea, do they owe us a performance? And also as well, what are your memories of the FA Cup?
Well, at the time when I was involved in it, the FA Cup was all important. And as a kid, you watched it because it was one of the main games on television. About one of the only games on television. Fans loved it, players loved playing in cup finals. Get a bit dialed.
We'll try and reconnect with Ron Atkinson. I think we've just lost Ron there. We'll try and reconnect with Big Ron. Great to hear his thoughts on the game and on the FA Cup as well. We will try and get him back on the line. Just having a few issues with reception there, Dale. But it is amazing to think that he did win that trophy twice and how different it was back then, back in the 80s, 1983 and 1985, pre-Alex Ferguson as well. He was in charge of Manchester United.
I think the 83 was the Brighton FA Cup final, wasn't it? I think that was the one where they went to replay. I think that it was Brighton scored really, really late on in the game. No, it was a mistake, I believe, and Manchester United scored the equaliser. And in the replay, it was it was Manchester United's there to be won. I think that we mentioned earlier on in the show that Ray Wilkins probably scored one of the greatest ever goals. I was going to ask Ron Atkinson about that as well, that, you know, when he cut in on them from the right-hand side, just chopped it and just curled it with his left foot into the far corner. And, yeah, you know, he mentioned also as well about it was the only game that was on TV as well. So it shows you how times have changed.
Amazing, isn't it? We can now hopefully cross back and reconnect with Ron Atkinson. Ron, can you hear us?
Yes, I've got that. Just an
you just cut out momentarily, Ron.
Yeah, I heard Dale on about Ray Wilkins' goal in the Brighton match. What was strange is that Ray scored and it was a great goal, and he took off and started racing towards the fans, and none of our players joined him. And he's looking round, he's only gone racing to the Brighton fans, doesn't he?
Ron, how would you put into your own words your own memories of Ray? Because there will be a poignant moment this afternoon. His widow Jackie will present the trophy. He made such a fantastic contribution, didn't he, to both Chelsea and Manchester United, did Ray Wilkins. But what was so evident when he did sadly pass away a little bit earlier on this year was the amount of love and the outpouring of respect that there was in the world of football for Ray Wilkins.
Because he was a genuinely nice guy. He really was a nice guy. I can hardly remember him causing any upsets anywhere he ever went. It was what you saw, it was what you got. He was a genuinely nice guy.
Really was, and it will be a special moment, I think, for his family as well, and for Jackie as well, when they do present that FA Cup trophy. But back to the football, Ron, and you mentioned, of course, Jose Mourinho's pragmatic style. There will, of course, need to be a level of investment in Manchester United's side to try and bridge that gap with Man City. Who do they need to sign? What do they need to do? Perhaps how much do they need to spend, maybe, in order to finally win a Premier League title since Sir Alex left the club?
Well, I would guess, first and foremost, that seems to be the answer to everything nowadays. You know, let's buy some more players. You know, there has been an awful lot of money spent at Manchester United over the last 3 years or so, an awful lot. I think somehow or other, maybe they need a couple of, if there are available, like Griezmann would be a great player for them. You know, I think he would be a terrific acquisition if they could get him. But they have players there that I think could be improved. I think the young players, the Rashfords, certainly Lingard's improved big time this year, but I think people like the Rashfords, the Martials, could actually step up a bit, have their level of performance improved by, if you like, specialist coaching. Another one I think Zuccheri is possibly the best left back in the country, but for whatever reason he's fallen out with the manager. The manager doesn't seem to want him on board. That can happen in football. But there's three examples of players whose performance level you could improve by top class coaching. I think that's what Guardiola does, in all fairness. I think Guardiola, better than probably any manager with maybe the exception of Klopp, he improves the level of some of his players. I mean, Guardiola has actually improved world-class players this season.
Ron, just going back to this afternoon's game then with Chelsea and Manchester United, you mentioned that, you know, at the top of the interview that you feel that Manchester United have got the edge. I agree with you as well. I'm going to go for Manchester United to win the FA Cup this afternoon. But how important is it? You know, I mean, we've seen two really sort of like poor performances by Man United and also Chelsea at Newcastle last week in the last of the Premier League games. Looking ahead to the game this afternoon, is it going to be an open game, or do you think that it's going to be very tight and it's going to be a low scoring game?
The suggestion would be, I'm fully expecting to still be there at extra time, maybe even penalties. You know, I think it'll be the two major players in the game for me are obviously Hazard. I think if Hazard if United can shackle him like they did in the league last season with when Andres Herrera went man-to-man with him and took him out of the game at Old Trafford, I think that would be important. I also think Sanchez, who's got a bit of a good pedigree at Wembley, would be the major player for United. I think whichever one of those dominates the game, be it Hazard or be it Sanchez, I think that'll be a massive door to win the cup.
Well, listen, Ron, we do appreciate you taking the time to talk to us this afternoon. We really do, and enjoy it. I think that's the main thing. It's a beautiful day, or at least it looks like a beautiful day over in the UK and in London. So it should be a fine conditions down at Wembley for the FA Cup final. We'll let you go now, though, Ron, and thank you so much for sparing the time to chat to us this afternoon.
No problem, my son. No problem. And tell Dale, get himself ready for the big international next year again.
I'm ready. I'm ready, Ron. Honestly, I'm doing 10K runs every day.
No, don't even.
That's with a dodgy hip as well.
No. Ron. That red wine bar is only 200 yards away. Keep cracking.
The voice there of former Manchester United manager Ron Atkinson. What an absolute pleasure it has been to get his thoughts on the FA Cup final. Manchester United taking on Chelsea, 8:15 p.m. kickoff at Wembley. There'll be more talk on all things FA Cup as we progress through the last couple of hours of this show. We'll also be hearing from Chris McCarty, the head of sport at ARN. He'll be at the game as well. Feels like everyone, apart from us, is going to be at this game this afternoon. When we come back, though, the sporting conversation continues.
Let's go.
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Welcome back. We are indeed on the rooftop garden here at Barasti. It's myself, Robbie, Dale Gordon and Carl Van Rosenvelt with you through until 6 p.m. this evening, keeping our eye on all the live sport that is taking place around the world as we speak. And I've got to tell you a quick update on the IPL. Rajasthan Royals taking on the Royal Challengers Bangalore. The winners will have to wait it out and see if they're going to play any part in the IPL playoffs. The losers will play no part in the playoffs. They will be out of this year's competition, and the Rajasthan Royals, I can tell you, have made a first innings total of 164 for 5 after 20 overs. That is the target. 165 is the target for the Royal Challengers Bangalore to chase, and it is its winner not takes all, but winner will possibly survive in this season's IPL. Carl Van Rosenvelt.
Yeah, just moving over to, as you're talking about playoffs, it's the first of the semi-final playoffs in the Viva Premiership. These boys will not be watching the Royal Wedding as they are playing an important game of rugby. It's Saracens taking on Wasps. Saracens leading that one 23-5. 39 minutes played, first half nearly done.
La Liga, Dale,
yeah.
Gordon?
Also, yeah, Robbie, after the massive big up I give Levante at the beginning of the show about their game this afternoon at Celta Vigo, they now, after going 1-0 up, they now find themselves 4-1
Ouch.
Down. Ouch, and that's 65 minutes gone. So 4-1 down, Celta Vigo 4, Levante 1.
There we go. So the days of beating Barcelona 5-4, very much in the distant memory for Levante. Now, tennis is the subject I want to turn our attention to, if we can, because a certain match in a semi-final of the Italian Open is due to get underway in the next half an hour or so. Rafa Nadal, the world number 2, he lost his ranking, of course, last week in Madrid to Roger Federer, who isn't playing, if we recall, any clay court events this year. But the way the rankings work on the ATP, the points that Nadal was defending were more important, and Roger Federer has gone ahead of him in the rankings. If he's able to win in Rome, Rafa Nadal will go back to world number 1, but that is incidental, if you like. What is more important is the fact that he is once again reprising that incredible rivalry, maybe one of the greatest rivalries we've ever seen in tennis. Nadal Federer would have to be up there, but Nadal Djokovic is the match we're going to be paying all our attention to at 5 p.m, Carl Van Rosenvelt. And I tell you what, the Serb is one of 2 active players to have a winning head-to-head record against Rafa Nadal. 26-24 Djokovic leads their head-to-head in the 50 times that they have met in professional ranks. Do you by any chance happen to know the other player?
Oh. Don't throw me a curveball like that.
I'm just stitching you up. You won't get it. I mean, I wouldn't have known it either had I not seen this stat a little bit earlier on this afternoon. Have a little guess.
No idea.
Dustin Brown. Can you believe that?
I wouldn't have got that.
Dustin Brown is the only other professional tennis player to have a winning head-to-head record against Rafa Nadal. But Novak is one of them, and Novak Djokovic has been speaking after his victory yesterday against Kei Nishikori in the quarterfinals. I got to say, and we said it earlier on in this show, it was the best he's played for a long time, and he's looking ahead now to today's semi-final.
It means a lot to me to be able to play semi-finals of the biggie tournament again. You know, it's been a year, as you said. I think the last semi-finals actually was here or probably before Wimbledon in the small tournament. So, I mean, you know, this is what I was looking forward to. This is what I was hoping, to achieve. Obviously, I don't want to stop here. Tomorrow is going to be the ultimate challenge on clay, you know, beating a Rafa is a really difficult thing to do on this surface, but I've done it before, and obviously I'm a different player today than I was at the time when I was winning against him on clay. But you know, I believe in myself. I will go out on the court trying to win. I mean, that's for sure. I know he's in a great form, but look, anything is possible. I've been playing some good tennis, really good tennis this week, especially the last couple of matches. Today the quality of tennis was really high. I mean, Kei was playing fantastic. I mean, especially in the first set, very quick, and it took me a little bit of time to adjust to his pace, which was very, very quick, as I said. But you know, I'm really happy that I mentally stayed stayed strong, and in the ending of the third set, you know, really fought and showed some resilience, and this victory means a lot to me on a different levels, mostly mentally.
So there you go, Novak Djokovic. You can tell there that he is just approaching this match with a slightly different set of expectations, CVR, to how he would normally go into a match against Rafa Nadal. Novak's one of the few players, I believe, that expects to win every match, even on clay, against Nadal. He's beaten him before. He has not a winning record on clay against Rafa, but a decent record, and he's given Rafa more trouble than a lot of Nadal's opponents in the past. So it's whether he can produce his very best game today in the next half an hour or so as to whether he can actually get past Nadal and into the final.
I think the big thing for Novak is he mentioned earlier in that interview, Robbie, that mentally that game was very, very important for him over Nishikori. He needs to start believing he can win. But I think watching him against Nishikori last night, he's struggling a little bit for consistency. He's still hitting a couple of loose shots, which he won't be afforded that luxury against Rafa Nadal. I mean, Rafa is the king of clay. We all know about that. But I do think that Novak can give him a good run for his money. The only thing is, Novak will have to work on his consistency. To me, last night, still hitting too many loose balls, and he'll have to work on getting a lot more first serves in. And then I do believe he will definitely be able to challenge Rafa Nadal. Beat him. I don't fancy him beating Rafa at the moment, especially the form that Rafa's in.
Well, Rafa did drop a set yesterday against Fabio Fognini, but he came back very strong to take it emphatically in the end. He's only lost one match in the clay court. That was against Dominic Thiem over in Madrid last week. In the entire clay court season, he put together that run, didn't he, Carl, of 50 straight successive sets. Quite astonishing. He wasn't even taken to 7-5 or 7-6 in any of those sets. Let's quickly get the thoughts now from Rafa Nadal, and he's admitted very frankly that he's in no rush to renew rivalries with Novak Djokovic.
Being honest, it's better to not playing against one of the best players of the history, no doubt about it. No, I am not this kind of a stupid guy that says, no, I want to play. No. When I have to play, I play, and I'm going to try my best to win as I did all my career. But of course, you prefer easier opponents than a great player like Novak. But of course, in the other hand, when you play some matches like I played against him in our career, you are happy to be part of that kind of matches, and you appreciate it a lot.
This is The Grill. Get involved with Dubai Eye on Facebook.
We're talking sport until 6 p.m. It's myself, Robbie, from Sports Tonight. It's Carl Van Rosenvelt and it's Dale Gordon with you through until 6. We're building up to the FA Cup final. We've heard the thoughts of former Manchester United manager Ron Atkinson. We will have, in about half an hour's time on the line, the head of sport here at ARN, Chris McCarthy. He is en route to the game with another friend, another pundit on the grill. Mark Archer will be accompanying Chris to Wembley. We did not receive any invites to attend the big game at Wembley, nor the royal wedding either. But that means we're here, we're at Barasti, we're at the rooftop garden. The game is always on here. We're keeping an eye on some live sport. And I want to turn our attention, if we can, Carl Van Rosenvelt, to the world of golf. And the reason I want to do that, not least because the AT&T Byron Nelson Championship over on the PGA Tour is ongoing. Mark Leishman, your leader, there on 15 under par. Aaron Weiss is one shot back. Brian Gay is two shots back of the leader, Leishman. Jimmy Walker and Eric Axley, Kevin Na, Martin Piller and Adam Scott. Nice to see him back up on a leaderboard. He's at 10 under par. That's over in the US. The more interesting tournament from a storyline point of view is what's going on over in Belgium at the moment, because it is the European Tour's new Belgian knockout format. It's a bit of a convoluted format. I will try and explain it to you in the briefest possible terms, and then you can give me your opinion on what they're up to over on the European Tour, because this is basically what happens in the Belgian knockout. Thursday, Friday is as normal, as a normal regular stroke play event. 36 holes are played. Then, based on the positions that each of those 64 players are on in the leaderboard, they are seeded accordingly for a knockout match. 9-hole stroke play. So 9 holes of the 64 are played on Saturday morning, then of 32, and then now we're on to the final 16. And they're whittled away in match play, stroke play, until Sunday we play the quarterfinals, the last 8, the semifinals, and the final.
You missed one thing, though.
Go on.
Don't the top 16 automatically qualify? I don't think they have to go into the first round of the match play. I might be wrong, Robbie. You are the guru, but...
I think you might have caught me on a technicality there.
That's what I was meant to believe.
I was trying to educate you, and you've ended up educating me. That's often how it goes on our broadcast together, Carl Van Rosenvelt. But forget the permutations and the complexities of the format, if we can. What do you think of the idea as a concept? Do you like it? Does it freshen things up from the usual 72 stroke play events?
Yeah, I kind of like it, and I think it's good to try different things. You know, I think at the end of the day, a lot of people have been complaining about golf being too long, taking too much time, and I think for these smaller type of tournaments, I think it's a fantastic way of mixing it up, giving everybody making it a more competitive at all times, Robbie. So yeah, I'm kind of for it, for sure.
Okay, well, the last 16 players, and they will be teeing off in just around about an hour's time. The first group goes off at 5:25 UAE time. The final group goes off. Nicholas Cole starts with Joachim Hansson. That one tees off just after we go off air at 6:15. But looking at the names in this last 16, it's clear that this is not one of the premier European Tour events. And you're smiling at me, Carl Van Rosenvelt. But the likes of David Drysdale, Josh Geary, Mike Lorenzo Vera, Matthew Baldwin, Ollie Fisher, Victor Perez, Matthew Southgate, Adrian Ortegi, Kolsarts and Hansson, it's not stellar. It's not what we're used to seeing here in the Middle East when they come and they play the big tournaments, the Desert Classic, the Abu Dhabi HSBC Championship, which attract fields which could compare to anywhere the world over.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, not doing an injustice to any of these guys, but I kind of think that's what the tournament is lacking. You know, it's lacking, should I say, notable names as such, Robbie. And I think maybe that's why this format might not kind of get the vote that it would if you, for example, had a Sergio Garcia in the mix there, or you had a Jordan Spieth in the mix, or you had a Tiger Woods in the mix. And I think that's a slightly disappointing from that perspective, that it's not really seen as one of the big European events to play in. And maybe this is the reason why the tournament is, and the format, not really getting the recognition it should.
Justin Thomas is the new world number one in golf. He took over from Dustin Johnson, who has had a wonderful run, a long run as world number one. But Justin Thomas, the strength of his results over the past couple of months have elevated him to that number one position. And as we always discuss, the conversation always turns inevitably when we talk golf to the figure of Tiger Woods, who is polarizing opinion even now, because no one can decide exactly how significant his comeback has been and whether he has lost his competitive edge, Carl van Roosevelt. We haven't had a chance to discuss this as yet. We've seen him contend at the Valspar. We've seen him have good weeks at the Arnold Palmer Invitational. He never really factored at the Masters, in all fairness. It wasn't one of his strongest performances. But as we build up to the second major of the season, and Tiger likely to make a reappearance at Jack Nicklaus's Memorial Tournament at the end of May, where are you on exactly where he is in this comeback? And are you confident that we will see Tiger lifting a trophy this season?
I'm not confident we'll lift it this season, but I'm definitely confident that Tiger Woods will lift the trophy again. And I think Tiger Woods is coming back to the Tiger Woods that we know. He's playing fantastic golf. We saw what he did at the Players when he shot 65, shot the lights out of that, I think it was second or third round, 65. So, Robbie, he's definitely got the game. I think Tiger, one thing that he needs to work on a bit more consistency, you know, he needs to shoot back-to-back kind of 65s to kind of be more in contention. But I think what Tiger Woods is now realizing is that, let's take his career 10 or 15 years back, I don't personally think there were as good of players in the field as what they are today. Because if we look at the players competing today, you just mentioned Justin Thomas becoming the new world number one. There's so many good players out there that can win week in and week out. And I don't believe Tiger had the same competition talking 10, 15 years back. He had the likes of Ernie Els back then. He had a Chris DeMarco that kind of blew hot and cold. You know,
David Duval.
Oh, yeah, David Duval. You know, the one trick, or the one tournament wonder, should I say. You know, to me, they were never really players like the Justin Thomases, the Jordan Spieth, the Dustin Johnson of this world, the Ricky Fowlers, the Jason Days. We can keep naming these players. And these guys are competing week in and week out. And I think that's the one hard thing that Tiger's finding. But speaking about Tiger and his game, I definitely think he's getting right back to where he was.
I think he's ahead of schedule, but I think given how well he played at the Valspar and obviously having a chance to win that tournament that was ultimately won by Paul Casey, perhaps that elevated expectations a little bit more into the fever pitch, because hysteria is never far away when it comes to Tiger. And he went into the Masters, believe it or not, as the favourite to win that tournament when the man has had four operations on his lower back. I mean, it's quite insane what he's been through in the last couple of years. You know, as it turned out, he did not factor at Augusta. Whether he can get into the kind of form that can see him factor in a tournament that traditionally he's struggled to be a real presence and a real threat in. The US Open has never really traditionally played into Tiger Woods' hands, because Tiger, as we all know, is not the straightest hitter off the tee, and it's all about fairways and greens at the US Open. That's not to say he hasn't had success there. He's had success in all major championships, but he hasn't won the US Open since 2008 on a course, Torrey Pines, that we all know the record that he's got there. It would be an amazing effort were he to even contend at the US Open in what, 3 weeks' time?
Yeah, I personally think at this moment in time, looking at Tiger, I don't believe he's in form that will win him a major. He needs too many things to go his way to win a major at this moment, because I feel that's how good the guys are on the circuit. I think from a Tiger Woods perspective, he seems to be a lot better off the tee at the moment than what he was before he went in for these big operations, which I kind of, you know, find he's very consistent. But I still feel with his flat blade and short game, he's not as sharp as what we know he can be. And I think once he fine-tunes that, we will definitely see Tiger Woods contending a lot more.
Justin Thomas is the world number one on paper, CVR, but is there truly a best player in the game at the moment, or is it simply the guy that just holds the ranking?
I don't know, Robbie. It's such a hard question to answer. It is such a hard question to answer. And the reason is, we used to, back in the days, as you say, 10 years ago, where Tiger Woods would just destroy the field and, you know, you'd have nobody to compete with him. But at the moment, there's not one clear guy that just dominates. I think that is how close golf is at the moment. It's amazing how many good US golfers there are at the moment. They just seem to be turning them out week after week. And I think at this moment in time, well, we won't see, I would say, for at least the next 5 years, one person being as dominant as what a Tiger Woods was 10 years ago. So, yeah, Dustin, he's got the title for this week or this month or whatever the case is, but I think it can so easily be taken away from him. The likes of Rory McIlroy not firing on all cylinders, Dustin Johnson, yeah, he's right up there, but you know, he's must really been a little bit, not inconsistent, but not himself the last 3 months. You've got Jason Day. I can keep naming names that can compete for that number one spot every week, every
all,
day of the week.
They're all within shooting range of it, because Justin Thomas, 9.18 is his average point score, and it is a complicated system that they use to work out. It's all about accruing points over a rolling period, but Justin Thomas, 9.18, he's just marginally ahead of Dustin Johnson, who's on 8.93. Jordan Spieth is in the equation at 8.09. Then John Rahm, 8.07. Justin Rose, 7.3. Ricky Fowler, Jason Day, Rory McIlroy, Hideki Matsuyama and Tommy Fleetwood all around the 6, 6.5 mark. So a couple of tournament wins for any of those guys and they'd be world number one.
Absolutely, and that's what I'm saying. It's such a close race at the moment. I think it's kind of just who's feeling it on the day.
Do you think someone can elevate themselves, get away from the pack? And if so, who?
I think it's a very tough question. I always believe Rory could be the man. He's been a little bit too inconsistent for that at the moment. But to me, at the moment, there's not one golfer. If I had to choose one out of the whole pack that could do it, I think it could be Jordan Spieth. But at this moment in time, Robbie, I don't see one person that you can really push the button and say, this guy will be above the rest like a Tiger Woods was a couple of years back.
Well, none of the world's top 10 are taking part in the Belgian knockout tournament, it's fair to say, but that's just got underway. Josh Geary has teed off against David Drysdale in this new look format. We'll keep our eye on that. We'll keep our eye on all the other live sport that is ongoing. We'll keep our eyes away from the big screen here at Barasti that is broadcasting pictures of the royal wedding, because we've already nailed our colours to the mast. Apart from Dale Gordon, we're really not that interested in what's going on in the royal wedding. More sports chat when we come back.
This is The Grill. Get involved with Dubai Eye on Facebook.
Welcome back to the rooftop garden here at Barasti. The sun is shining. The game is always on. Lots of live sport to keep you abreast of. Rafa Nadal and Novak Djokovic will be resuming their rivalry on a tennis court in around about 10 minutes' time. That one gets underway. There's football to build up to, the FA Cup final, the Scottish Cup final to look ahead to as well. We'll shortly be speaking just after 5 o'clock to Chris McCarty, the head of sport at ARN. He's en route to Wembley to watch the FA Cup final. I know he's held a royal wedding party in the build-up to that. What a day, what a Saturday to look forward to if you're Chris McCarty. We'll get the thoughts of him. I'm alongside Dale Gordon and Carl Van Rosenvelt. If you want to get in touch, join the conversation, you can do so on 4001. We just spoke golf. I want to turn our attention to stateside and the world of NBA, Carl Van Rosenvelt, because there's an awful lot going on in the conference finals over there in the East and the West, of course. The East, the Cavaliers are facing a mountain to climb against the Boston Celtics. LeBron James's Cavaliers 2-0 down in the series. They go to home court advantage then for the third game. That one tips off at 4:30 tomorrow morning. Will you be getting up for that one, Carl?
No, I won't.
In a word, in a short answer, no.
Robbie, I tell you what, I was actually at the first of the playoffs at the TD Gardens where I watched the Celtics against the Milwaukee Bucks, I think it was, and I must say they looked pretty good out there. To me, they've been the surprise package of the NBA this season. Of course, losing Kyrie Irving, people did not expect much of them.
Gordon Hayward as well, early doors.
Exactly, Gordon Hayward, Kyrie Irving was their kingpin player, and they've really come through the series absolutely fantastic. They've taken a 2-0 lead against the Cavs. I mean, LeBron James was absolutely terrible in the game. I think only scoring 15 points in that first game. He picked himself up, and I think he came back with 34 unanswered points in that second game. But, you know, I always say, against the Cleveland Cavaliers outfit, you ultimately got the best player in the league within that team. It's still very, very early days, and you shouldn't get too excited.
The key stat here is that the Boston starting backcourt, which is Jaylen Brown and Terry Rozier, they've outscored the Cavs starting guards 72 points to 12 in these two games thus far. They've won by double digits in both these opening games. Now, they did have home court advantage thanks to the fact that they were seeded higher in the regular season, CVR, but this is a must-win game, clearly, for the Cavs, because no NBA team has survived a 3-0 deficit in playoff history.
Absolutely, Robbie, as you say there, and you just actually brought up the most important stat out of the whole lot, that LeBron's teammates need to start pulling their finger and start shooting some points, because at the end of the day, he's doing a great job, but the other team behind him are absolutely not supporting him. And I think until he gets that team supporting the other guys in the team, as you say, shooting baskets, they really are going to struggle.
Do you back them to do it? Are Cleveland going to make yet another NBA Finals? They've been there the last three.
Yeah, I think they're going to be a different team when they go back to Cleveland. Of course, as you said, the third game will be in Cleveland, Ohio, at their home court. And I don't know, I just think LeBron will get the troops rounded. He'll be on fire. Of course, I think he's still got a couple of points to prove. He's a born winner, the man. So I don't think it's over. I still fancy Cleveland to take it.
You still think Cleveland will actually advance?
Absolutely.
And book a date with who? That is the big question, because things are tied up over in the Western Conference Finals. The all-conquering Golden State Warriors, they are going up against the top team in the West over the course of the regular NBA season. The Houston Rockets, led by their MVP-elect James Harden, who's been fantastic thus far in this playoff. What a job the Houston coach, Mike D'Antoni, has done as well. The Warriors won that first game in Houston, but in a must-win game, you feel for the Rockets, because to go down 2-0 against the Warriors and then have to go into their backyard, CVR, would have been a bridge too far. But the Houston Rockets have given themselves a chance. It's now a best of five as opposed to a best of seven. And the way I look at this is that the Golden State Warriors are the best team in the NBA. Man for man, star power for star power, the Golden State Warriors are number one. Over the course of a longer series, you'd expect that superiority to tell in a one versus one. But the fact that this is a best of five, the fact that the Houston Rockets have been playing inspired basketball for the duration of this season, and the fact they've got a guy who's clearly in the form of his life in James Harden, you've got to give them a pretty good chance going into these final five games.
I don't know, Robbie. I think you've just said it, you know, that Golden State, that they are the best team in the league. They've got the best players. Kevin Durant has been in sensational form. Yeah, they must really didn't have the best start to the season. They slipped up once or twice. But they kind of, I get the impression that, you know, once they got the cobwebs out from last season, as I said, they slipped up once, they just kept rolling on. And I think at this moment in time, they're going to be very, very hard to beat. I hear what you're saying about James Harden. He had a spectacular second game in Houston. But I think at the end of the day, the Golden State Warriors, they've just got too much firepower. I believe we'll see exactly the same final as what we did last year. And I believe we'll see the same result.
The Golden State Warriors have won 15 playoff series games in a row, unanswered. No team has been able to best them. That is since the Cleveland Cavaliers did beat them in the final, what was it, 2 years ago? Not last year, but the year before. They were 3-1 down in that series. LeBron James inspired them to a famous triumph, and that is the task facing these Houston Rockets, and ultimately the task that will face whoever they meet in the final.
Yeah, but I mean, you're saying that, but just remember that LeBron James had much better backup staff than, not taking anything away from the players. He had Kyrie Irving in that team, which really does make a big difference. And I kind of feel...
And Golden State didn't have KD.
Exactly my point. So I kind of think that at this moment in time, LeBron is struggling with a better backup staff. He doesn't quite have those players there to support him. But I still believe that Cleveland have got enough firepower to get past the Celtics. They will then meet Golden State in the final, and I think Golden State will destroy them.
Let me ask you this question. Would a win for the Rockets or a win for the Celtics in the NBA championships be good for NBA? Would it be nice to mix things up if someone was to cause an upset? The Golden State Warriors trying to build this dynasty. Who knows how many rings they could win over the course of the next few years. But would it be nice to see some fresh faces holding up that trophy?
Yeah, absolutely. And I got to say, you know, to answer your question, I think it's got to be the Celtics, you know, with the season that they've had.
You're a Boston man. You're a marathon man.
I'm actually a Miami Heat man, to be honest with you. The less we say about them, the better. But I think, you know, Robbie, especially as to what they've gone through this season, especially with the injury of Kyrie Irving, if they can pull it through, even to make that final, it will be sensational for them.
LeBron James, much has been said about this man. He is an incredible athlete, is he not? He is a guy that produces numbers that is up there with the very best who have ever played the game of basketball. They seem to be fixated on this debate over in the US between LeBron James and Michael Jordan. For me personally, when I look at the numbers, it's not a debate. Michael Jordan is simply superior. He's got more championships. His numbers in the real, where it counts, they stack up better than LeBron James. Longevity, it's a similar case. Yes, there are certain areas in certain stats where LeBron James has his nose in front. Yes, if LeBron James continues to play at a high level for the next few years, he will probably pass Jordan in terms of all-time points scored on the NBA list. But there are other individuals who are up there as well in terms of the all-time points list. But where do you fall on this argument? Is that a silly question, Carl? You've got to be a Michael Jordan man.
I hate to agree with you, Robbie, but on this statement, I definitely do agree with you. I think LeBron, I kind of just feel if we stats is one thing, you know, and the stats never lie, as you say. But I kind of feel he just doesn't kind of have that X factor that Jordan did. And, you know, Jordan was always a very, very special athlete, and he just seemed to always produce.
Didn't have the shoes either.
Yeah, exactly. And he just always seemed to produce when you really, really needed to. And not taking anything away from LeBron, but I still think he's got a bit of a way to go. His age is catching up with him. But I think what's going to be very interesting to see at the end of this season is where LeBron ends up. And I've got a funny suspicion that it might be the LA Lakers.
Wow. What's telling you that? Is that inside sources or just...
Just rumors out there, Robbie Greenfield. Don't quote me on it. Just rumors out there.
Just rumors. You're not going to put any sources to shame by revealing them here on The Grill on Dubai 103.8. Those are the thoughts of Carl Van Rosenvelt. So, Carl, you are picking the Golden State Warriors to go up once again for the fourth time in a row up against the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Yeah, and Golden State to take it once again.
And Golden State in a sweep, in a one-sided affair, or...
I reckon Cleveland will get a game off them, and then the rest will be Golden State, yeah.
Wow, okay. Emphatic stuff there. That is the prediction of Carl Van Rosenvelt. When we come back, we will be in conversation with Chris McCarty of Sports Tonight fame. He's on his way to Wembley. He is, of course, a huge Manchester United fan, and he'll be giving his take and his verdict on how things are shaping up now. Just 3 hours and a quarter away from kickoff in the biggest match of the season for both Manchester United and Chelsea. It is the FA Cup final. You will be able to listen to it as well, live here on Dubai Eye 103.8. When we come back, the sporting chat continues.
Let's go.
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.